Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Newsmakers podcast. This is Kyle Gargaro, editorial director of the ACHR News. Today, we welcome in Dan Antonelli, who is the founder of Kick Charge Creative, a branding and advertising agency that primarily works with plumbing and HVAC businesses. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hi, Kyle. How are you doing today?
Doing real good. First off, just so everyone kind of get up to speed, why don't you just give us a little bit of your background and how you got into this HVAC marketing and branding world?
Sure. Actually, believe it or not, I started in the sign industry when I was probably 15 years old, and I was I learned sign painting and hand lettering. And actually, one of the first vans I actually lettered was for a heating and air contractor in Staten Island, New York. But I decided to go to college, or I should say, my parents were very persuasive in encouraging me to go to college, and I got a degree in advertising and communications. And while I was at school, I was still actually doing lettering and you know, painting trucks for clients and things like that. And I graduated, started working actually as a graphic designer in New York City, and then I launched the company while I was working full time, and did that you know, as sort of my night job. So I was doing lettering, I was doing some, you know, started doing logos. It really became, you know, really hyper-focused on the idea of branding for small businesses and why that was so critical for their success. And within 6 months or so, I had enough work to sort of quit my day job, and then I launched it full-time. And I worked out of the house for a number of years, had a couple of small kids that I thought would be cool to be home and be around. And then in 2007, we got our first office. That was after having some employees that were actually working out of my house, which was a little strange.
Sure.
And we slowly grew from there. So when we first opened the office, we had, I think, three employees, and we stayed there for about 8 years. And then I built this new office here, which is about 5,000 square feet. And we have about 20 employees now.
You're never in charge of those signs that people stand out on the street and swing around in a pretty rhythmic fashion. Was that ever you, or are we talking different signs?
No, Dan? That was never me, fortunately. but, you know, listen, I still love lettering and hand lettering, actually. It's just it's a very cool craft. It's a very lost art. But I think that experience that I had so young was so critical in helping me very much understand the medium. So when you look at truck wraps and you look at how brands are applied to truck wraps, things about legibility, you know, making sure that those brands function in that particular environment well, and how to design for that environment. I just think that experience can't really be replicated. You know, just sitting on the side, physically hand painting, and actually working under like a master sign painter, really taught me so much about legibility issues and the importance of how to integrate brands on that medium in a way that communicates to the people they're trying to sell to. So I'm really grateful for that experience. And it was so nice too, when we opened up this new office after I built it, the sign painter that I had actually worked for in Staten Island, New York, he actually came out, and I hadn't seen him in probably 20 years, but he came out for the opening. And I was just so grateful for him and the opportunity he had given me when I was literally like 15, 16 years old. And I just would have swept the floors if they would have let me do that. And he's like, no, you can start doing lettering. And so I just had such a great experience doing that. And when I went to college, I learned under an art director, the more traditional graphic design. So I kind of had the best of both worlds, and I was, you know, super fortunate with those experiences.
That's great. I guess just starting off, I want to talk in the broadest sense, because the word branding can mean different things to different people. Kind of how would you define, you know, company branding their business?
Yeah, so it's so true, Kyle. Like, people, like, they throw that word around, and I think that it's sometimes misunderstood. And I think the simplest explanation, you know, I actually have this in the book that I wrote called Building a Big Small Business Brand. And in that book, I sort of make the analogy that a brand is like a wheel, okay? And the center of that wheel is your hub, and that hub is really your logo, right? And then the spokes that go out of that hub comprise a wheel, and that wheel is ultimately what I would say your brand is. So around that wheel, you have all the different touch points that a consumer would interact with your company. So you have your truck, you know, you have your website, your social media presence, you know, direct mail, billboards, all those touch points, you know, really comprise what your brand is. And you could also say too, branding is what people say about your business if they were describing it to another person or if they were talking about you. Those are also things. But I think the important aspect, and I love the wheel analogy only because I think it's easy for people to visualize, but if you imagine you're building a wheel and your hub is not round, your hub is kind of jacked up, and then you're trying to build a round wheel, that wheel just isn't going to turn smoothly. Like, it'll turn, but it's going to take so much more effort to get that wheel to turn. And that's why, you know, for us, we look at that logo as being, you know, the fundamental thing to make sure you get right, because otherwise you can't build a perfect wheel. You know, it's going to be unbalanced. It's not going to function properly across all those mediums that will integrate it.
Well, talk a little bit about it then. I like that analogy about the logo and what goes into that. It's just not, I assume, picking a colors and picking a design. You really want it to speak to what your business is about. So how do contractors even start getting involved with that?
Yeah, you know, you want it to do a lot of things, right? So, you know, there's a number of aspects that we look into when we're deciding how to develop a logo for a client. We want to know, first off, what the competitive market looks like, okay? So, you know, we'll have a questionnaire that we'll work on with the client where we ask, all right, who are the top 5 to 10 competitors in your market? And then we'll research them. I want to know what they look like, what colors they use, what strategies they use, kind of what their brand voice may be. So that's the first part, is just making sure that we know what's in the market that we're going up against. And we want to think about a solution for that particular client that will be unique and what we call disruptive, right? Because I don't want to put a brand or an idea or a concept that feels like it could be confused or feels like it could be similar to something that's already out there, right? That serves no purpose then. I'm sort of just looking like everyone else. So that's one thing too that we want to think about, is the concept of disruption, is the idea that you build a brand that feels unique in your market and doesn't feel like what everyone else is doing. And sometimes the irony of that too is their default, you know, sort of security blanket for them is that they get scared a little bit about the idea of disruption because it's not what everyone else is doing. Like, everyone else is doing the same thing and you're going out there and saying, I'm going to do something completely different. And that takes a little bit of guts, you know, and they're a little bit scared sometimes about that idea of disruption. But ultimately, that's really where we see you gain the most traction is if you put a brand out there that's unexpected, that doesn't feel like what every other HVAC contractor or contractor in general is doing, and suddenly people will notice it a little bit more because it feels fresh to them. It feels different. So really trying to think about that. Then, of course, you have to figure out how that logo will function in those other environments that it's going to be used for. And that's why, you know, certainly we do so much with the vehicle wraps and making sure that those logos will function properly in that environment. Because really, honestly, the vehicle wraps and the truck wrap design that integrates that logo is the most critical integration of that brand. It's the most important use of that brand, okay? Because that's in the communities every single day, driving around. And every single impression that van makes within that community, we're trying to control that impression. We're trying to have that consumer feel something about that particular contractor. And we're also trying to get that logo sticky in that consumer's minds. So when they're ready for service, instead of saying, hey, you know, I need to go on Google and I'm going to just type in heating repair Delaware or heating repair Washington, New Jersey, and hope that my company shows up, wouldn't it be much better if they just typed in my name from the beginning? So that's what we call kind of winning on the streets, because I'd rather the people know my brand name when they're ready for service rather than trying to fight to be on the top of Google. Of course, we know being on the top of Google, we want that too. But it would be so much better if they simply just knew our name, and when they're ready for service, they just typed it in. That's what you want. And that's how you get sticky, you know?
Right. And to your point, especially for bigger contractors, as larger fleet, those are driving billboards.
Exactly.
So what's the fine line between getting information out on that driving billboard and it's zipping past too. You don't want to have too much stuff on there. Exactly. How do contractors kind of navigate that?
Exactly. And we're all about really trying to distill that messaging to its purest form. Okay. So I don't want, a whole laundry list of things on that. I want the brand front and center. I want the website very legible. And if they have a mark or a symbol, I want that symbol to be integrated in a very dominant way. So then when people see that symbol, they think of that contractor and that name that's associated with it. And colors are also so critical as well. So the color research that we do, and it's really ironic because you'll look at any given market and you'll find so much repetition with colors. You'll see like three contractors, and in the HVAC world, we all know that everyone loves blues and reds, but it's a very difficult color palette to own. So we want to say, okay, if everyone else is doing blue and red, then I'm probably going to do orange and teal, let's just say, because I know that when I put those colors in this particular market, I'm not competing against with all these other people using the same color schemes. So the other thing too, to your point, right, is what are the other important things, right? Obviously, don't put too much information on there. Don't put more than those key elements, but also to make sure that the takeaway that homeowner has is positive, right? So recently someone was posting on one of the forums online for the HVAC owners, and they had a truck wrap that was super busy and super illegible. And they said, oh, well, people say they notice or they see my van. I'm like, that's fine. Being noticed is only one piece of the equation. It's what that impression says is what you see guys not really understanding, right? So you can make your trucks, pink and purple, and people would say that they see it all the time. But what is the takeaway for that homeowner is the aspect that really a good brand and a good logo is trying to control at the end of the day.
Yeah, because I could go to the corner and just start yelling nonsense and I'm getting noticed, but people probably don't want to interact with me, right?
Right, exactly. So, again, a good brand and a good logo is ultimately trying to control the conversation. Like, I want to take control of the perception that the homeowner has about this business. And let's face it, unfortunately, a lot of homeowners have negative stereotypes that they assign to contractors. They're worried about who's coming to their home and who's going to be fixing their equipment. They're worried about being treated fairly and honestly. And so before they ring the doorbell, I want them to feel something about that company. I want all those touch points to be communicating all those values that are important for a homeowner to feel about the person that they're about to hire. And so if I can do that, if I can have that homeowner feel something positive about that that contractor before he gets to the door, then ultimately we've done a good job there. We've really helped them feel something positive. And most contractors in general, in terms of their branding, they're either neutral or they're negative. Okay. They either, I don't feel great, I don't feel bad, or I'm a little worried about who's coming to my house is the other end of the extreme there. So if I can start the conversation with, again, I feel something positive, I think I'm going to be treated fairly, then I'm probably already ahead of what most of the other contractors that may be giving them estimates might look like.
And I assume when you're talking about color, and let's just say we go with teal because that we've done our research and that's what's going to pop and no one else is in that, then we go all in on teal, right? That's our website, our uniforms, you hand out a magnet, we're all in on that color. Would that be accurate?
Exactly. Yep. Integrating those colors across the board, everything, every touch point, using those colors in a very consistent manner. Exactly.
Okay. And then let's just assume that most of our contractor listeners here have established a brand. Kind of under what situation would you recommend a rebrand and how would that be accomplished? Or is it something that maybe should just be tweaked rather than really changed? Kind of speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. We do about 150 rebrands a year. Okay. And I would say when it's appropriate, you try to leverage whatever equity they may have in their existing brand. Okay. Maybe there's an element of their brand that people do know them by. Okay. So I don't immediately just want to discount that and throw that away if I can leverage it. Often it's just things like maybe the image is just done in an amateur way, or maybe the integration of the truck wrap is done in an amateur way. But maybe there's foundational elements that are solid that I can build off of. So whenever possible, I want to try to leverage as much equity as I can, because it's silly to just throw that away, right? But sometimes they come and they come to us and they literally have nothing that's worth salvaging, okay? Sometimes it's even the name has really significant problems. Initial base brands like, you know, ACH Heating and Air, very difficult to brand. Initial base brands, even last name brands, are very difficult to brand, because again, does Air Experts sound like a better company than Smith Plumbing and Heating? Well, right off the bat, it sounds like a better company. I don't know if it is or not, but it just sounds that. So again, on startups and things like that, you know, if you can lead in with a brand promise just from your name alone, that's more advantageous than just using your last name, which people don't know if that's a good or bad thing. You know, unless you've been in the community for 25 years, it's very difficult for people to associate a specific promise to a last name based brand or an initial based brand. So you look at those things, you know, again, maybe they have a mascot, but the mascot is just poorly executed or not executed well. So there may be something about that that we can leverage. So we definitely want to look and see if there's things we can salvage. And if there's not, we'll have that conversation and we'll talk about why those things are not working in your favor and how a rebrand might address fixing those core deficiencies.
Do you have to do kind of research in the market and how you're interpreted to know what needs to be changed? Or, you know, do we have a name that people recognize, or is the fact that it's Gargaro HVAC, no one really cares and we should go to Air Service or Air Experts or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. Again, the longevity of that particular brand name within that community is going to factor into that decision-making process. You got 20 years experience using this particular brand name in your community. You should hopefully have some traction. You should hopefully have people that know your brand name. So sometimes the shorter you've been in business, the more nimble you can become to pivot a little bit and move. But, you know, once you start getting to a certain level, then you've got 20 trucks on the road, it becomes a little bit more challenging. And certainly there's a whole host of logistical challenges that go into a name change and even a brand change. You know, we rebranded Gem Plumbing and Heating in Rhode Island, which is like around $100 million company with hundreds of trucks. And that was a very challenging, you know, rebrand. But the results after that exercise really spoke to how well it performed. You know, like even just having only 25% of their truck wraps redone, they experienced 4 times the number of call volume from their new truck wraps. So you could see that, you know, even on the larger scale, it's expensive to rewrap 25 trucks, right? But they knew that the ROI was there on something like that. So even if you are large, it's never like too late to really do it, but certainly you have to factor in the pros and cons of that. You know, they just had a brand that didn't leverage their name in a great way. And certainly the truck wraps weren't leveraged in a great way. And so we sought to fix those issues.
Okay. How about people that are just starting out now? Certainly a lot of our readers are technicians, then decide, hey, I want to go off on my own. So your advice to them when there's no history of their brand or their company is you want to stay away from your last name. You'd rather want your company name to tell what your company does.
Yeah, exactly. So avoid last name based brands, avoid initial based brands. And think about names that evoke a specific promise or a specific deliverable or even a specific image that maybe go, what, maybe it's Purple Cow Plumbing and Heating. Like that sounds like it'd be a terrible name for a heating and air company, but at least you say the words and you immediately think of a visual, right? So names that evoke visuals also can sometimes really work well, because it's very easy to get that brand to be sticky in that community because there's an obvious symbol that would be associated with that brand. So we do a lot of naming. You know, this year we'll probably do about 30 or 40 different naming projects. And that's a lot of fun because now you get to ideate from scratch what this new entity will look like, will feel like, will sound like, what the brand voice is going to sound like. And certainly I think from a creative standpoint, there's no baggage at that point, right? It's not like I have to worry about anything that was done in the past. It's completely, you know, doing something from scratch. But definitely those are things to avoid. And then you have to just make sure that as you're thinking about names that you want to use, You want to make sure from a legal perspective that you can actually use those names. So that's the most challenging aspect of naming, is that you may come up with what you think is a great name. You need to be cognizant of the fact that maybe there's actually someone that has a federal trademark on that name, which would preclude you from using that name in your own state. So federal supersedes state. So a federal trademark means that no one in the country can use that name in your service, in your type of service. So home services would be one of the classifications for the trademark. So guys sometimes make the mistake of going and searching their statewide registry and saying, oh, no one in the state has this name, I can use that. And they don't realize that from a federal perspective, that can come back to haunt them, because the owner of that trademark, even though they're not in your market, they could choose to enforce and send you a cease and desist. And then you're basically out of luck at that point for using that particular name. So do your research, you know, make sure that it's free in your state, obviously, is the first step. But then you also do want to check on a federal level and just make sure that it's something you can use.
Okay, is there, I'm naive in this regard, is there just some federal trademark website that you can go in, punch in the name, or how should our listeners handle that?
Yeah, the United States Patent Office, it's the USTPO.gov, I believe is the website. And you could go in and you type in the name, and then it'll show you listings of anyone that has that name registered. And then you want to check the classification or the service that's assigned to that. There's service classification. So obviously, if someone has the same name, but they're in a different type of business, that won't affect you. But home services has a specific class that you want to make sure no one else is using. So, I mean, a good lawyer should help you in that regard if you want to make sure of that before you go and invest, you know, buying everything and branding everything. You want to make sure that you can use that name.
Right. And on the flip side of that, remember we did a story in the news a couple of years ago that you helped us out on with people were stealing logos and that kind of thing. Yeah. And back in the day, maybe you wouldn't notice, but with the internet, it's probably a lot more frequent. Plus, it's a lot easier to identify. What should contractors be doing to protect their brand and their logo in that regard?
So definitely if you get a new logo designed by someone, I would recommend then you take the step of protecting that. So you would file a federal trademark. Again, you could just deploy a trademark attorney to do the registration for you, or you could try to do it on yourself. I always recommend you just work with a trademark attorney because they know the ins and outs and they'll get it filed properly. But even before you get to that step, like, you know, just like that article that I was in that we talk about, is you want to make sure that whoever designed that logo for you, that you actually can use that logo, right? That sounds weird, right? Well, I just hired this guy to design my logo. What do you mean I can't use it? Well, you know, depending on the source of who you used, sometimes, unfortunately, some of those logos that are sold to other people belong to another entity. So you just need to make sure you're dealing with a reputable company that's designing your new logo, because you don't want to, again, integrate it all over your Vans and then find out later that that's actually a trademark that belongs to someone else. And then that becomes a very expensive lesson, because you're going to wind up having to redo all that stuff from scratch.
Sure. And then that's good advice. And then where do you come in on mascots? Is that a thumbs up or thumbs down? Or does it depend on your company and what messaging you want to do?
You know, we do certainly a lot of mascots. It's not the default answer. Like it really depends on the market. It really depends on what else is happening from a competitive perspective. And so you want to make sure that if you're in a market that has an abundance of mascot branding, then I wouldn't want to put another one in the same market. So we typically, again, that's something that we're going to research in that particular market. If we see that there is no other mascots being used, or the ones that are being used are just really poorly executed, then that'll be a conversation to have. We found that they do work very well with consumers, that they're memorable, that people do assign, you know, sometimes they're more fun, they're more playful. So it kind of lightens a little bit of the mood. And when you temper that with very professional branding that goes along with it, it still makes it feel like a very professional company. So, you know, sometimes the mascots that we do are thematic in nature. Like, for example, if you're doing something that's more nostalgia based for the brand, then you try to think about brands that, you know, or techniques that were deployed in the 50s or the 40s and what those mascot-based approaches look like, and then integrate that into a design. But it's an interesting thing because there's a lot of chatter sometimes where guys are like, oh, there's too many mascots or mascots don't work. And the data that we have as far as metrics showing the results of mascot-based brands don't support that as a theory. As a matter of fact, we've rebranded so many companies that had that really uber corporate look, that was almost very sterile in its presentation. And we've done something that's almost like a 180 from that, that's fun and memorable. And oh my God, like the results totally support that theory that, you know, sometimes a fun, memorable mascot is just going to outperform that sort of very slick, but yet sterile, uber professional, look, so,
right.
So we definitely have redone a lot of those very, very clean, but yet sort of, we call them blanding, right? So instead of branding, it's blanding. And we've redone so many of those approaches. And then, the owners just really speak to the fact that, there's so much more traction that they were able to gain with that more memorable approach. So,
right. Are jingles still a thing, or is that kind of a thing of the past?
No, absolutely. They really do help. There's a client that we rebranded in Jacksonville, Florida called Bueller Heating and Air, or Bueller Air, actually. And they have a tagline, stay cooler with Bueller. And they run that with the radio spots. And then when we rebranded them, we have this huge, mascot. It's only just really a head with sunglasses on and the tagline right above, stay cooler with Bueller. And like the feedback and the connection between the radio and then the repetition of the imagery from, he's got 8 or 9 trucks right now that are in those communities has been crazy. And that's just a great example also of showing that the ROI on a well-branded company is really superior to one that's blending in, right? So Jason Bueller was $2.5 million in revenue. And I think this year they're on pace for about $6 million. And that's over almost a 3-year period. He's on pace to do that this year, but really 24 months later, he doubled in size, but yet spent the same exact amount of money on advertising as a percentage of revenue. So how do you explain that for years he was spending that same amount and he was only growing incrementally, but then suddenly a rebrand happens, he spends the same amount of money on advertising and he doubles in revenue. And again, that's just because he became a household name within his community because of the well-branded trucks and the rest of the campaign that went along with it. So yes, jingles, I think, can still work very well. And I think that they can help that brand gain traction faster.
Right. You kind of break through the noise a little bit. Sounds like what he was doing down there in Florida. Yeah. Now what's kind of one or two important items about branding that's a lot of contractors, just simply forget about? We'll call it like the kind of the low-hanging fruit that they might be able to implement in their business this week or next,
that they forget about, or that they should integrate,
that that they forget about or haven't thought of, I guess.
I think, like you mentioned earlier, the idea of integration is sometimes something that you see not very well executed. So they have a logo done, and then over time somehow that logo morphs a little bit, and maybe the uniforms that the guys are wearing is slightly different, and maybe the business card that they hand out is slightly different. So if there's a way to make sure that whenever that homeowner is interacting with your brand, whether it's on your Facebook page or on your website or handing out that business card, that all those things match, right? And it is just kind of a simple thing. So do you have a file or a logo guide that you give to all these vendors that are looking to do like, hey, I'm going to get t-shirts made. What do you send all these people that's consistent? So if you don't have a consistent set of sort of a blueprint for your brand, maybe get one, because you want to make sure that all these people that you're asking to do something with your brand are all on the same page. They know what blue you should be using. It's a specific number, right? It's not an interpretation. It's a number. And so if there's a way, and if they look around, maybe the equipment stickers are suddenly different. If there's a way to just see about making sure that every single touch point, and I'm like fanatical about it because I just really believe I want to control every single touch point. I don't want anything rogue. Like, I hate when my clients go rogue, and I'll see something posted online and I'll call them out. I'm like, dude, like, that's the wrong font that you use for your phone number. And it sounds like it's such an insignificant thing, but it's not. So, you know, consistency is something that they can do without hiring another agency, without doing anything. They can do that on their own. They just have to make sure that the sort of that master blueprint file is what's being given out on a consistent basis. And if they see variations on it, you know, I'm not saying you got to throw things in the garbage, but on the next reprint, let's make sure that these things are you know, tightened up and everything is consistent. So that's something simple that they could do.
Okay, that's a good tip. And then if our listeners kind of are like what they're hearing, but they want to farm out the headache to you instead of do it themselves, where should we direct them if they want to get a little help with all this branding stuff?
Sure. I mean, they could visit our website at kickcharge.com. There's also a ton of content on our site too, that webinars that I've done that are specifically catered towards HVAC. Again, whether or not they hire us or not, the most important thing they can do is just be educated about why it's so important. You know, so I want every contractor to win, right? And these are the things that we've invested in just to try to teach contractors about the importance of branding. And certainly, like the book that I wrote, if they wanted to learn more specifics, it's called Building a Big Small Business Brand. It's on Amazon. It's also on our site. But it just talks about the idea of how you can use a brand to really set yourselves apart from the competition, and how it will basically deliver a better ROI on your overall marketing, which is really the ultimate reason why you invest in it.
Sure. All right. Sounds good. Well, Dan, really appreciate you taking the time today and kind of filling us in on how to brand an HVAC business.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me.